Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a vice president and branch leader with Fidelity Investments. And with me today is Tony Zhang, chief strategist of Options Play. Tony is a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, it's good to be back with you. Welcome today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. A lot has happened in the markets in the last couple of weeks, so really excited to break down what we're seeing and what our outlook is going forward.
I agree. Looking forward to it. So today is Thursday, January 23rd, and it's been a very busy political week. And of course, that's come with policy forecasting. And then economic news continues to give us updates, especially on inflation. And it's helpful to start with some high-level views before we get into the nuts and bolts of our trade conversations. So, Tony, let's get started today with your macroeconomic view of the markets. And can you just share with us what you're observing recently?
Yeah, thank you so much, Roberta. And as you said, this has been a week full of political agendas, and with the a shortened week with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, a full earnings calendar on deck, we really had a lot driving the markets this week. But I would say that we had a pretty significant turnaround in terms of just the general tone and optimism of the markets, especially with the Trump presidency. Last week we had a little bit of a lift to that change in tone with the cooler than expected inflation print that provided a little bit of a bounce here for the overall markets. But this week going into the Trump inauguration, we really saw markets trade on a bit more optimism of the fact that there's expectations of some form of deregulation across, multiple industries, as well as tax policies that are going to be more favorable, for quite a few different industries as well. So what's interesting, out of all of this is that we saw small caps. If you look at IWM, the ETF that tracks the Russell 2000 small cap ETF, that outperformed the S&P 500. And what that shows me is that, the broader market is playing a bit of catch up here. And that's generally a good sign after what we saw was a bit of weakness here over the last couple of weeks. There was some concerns that perhaps we're near a market top and we're about to turn back lower here. But the fact that we're seeing the rest of the market play a bit of catch up here is really a good signal for the potential resumption of a bullish trend. We have the 10-year yield moderating back below 4.6%, which is going to reduce some of the immediate headwinds that we were concerned about here from the last couple of weeks. We were concerned that 10-year yields were going to get reached 5% here. Those concerns have eased a little bit here over the last week, and that's provided again a bit of a lifeline for equities. And then just the general concerns around tariffs have kind of softened a bit here this week as well. Trump did not go with day one with those tariffs that he was talking about to for China, for Mexico, for Canada. Instead, he's really opting for a more softer tone and be seemingly open to more negotiations. And that's been another driver, I think, of or reducing some of the sourness that investors have had going into the going into the inauguration was the concerns around whether or not tariffs was going to cause further inflation, tax cuts are going to cause further inflation. Some of that stuff is eased a little bit, and we're seeing that in the S&P 500. We bounced off of a major support level last week, that $5,800 level. That was a major line in the sand that we were that we wanted the bulls to hold in order to confirm at least a neutral market, and that's exactly what we got last week. And now this week we're pushing up on all-time highs around 6,100. If we can break above 6,100, that would signal a new bullish trend here for the overall equity market. So, like I said, we saw a pretty big shift here in terms of tone over the last couple of weeks. We also had earnings season this week show up pretty strong. You had Netflix, United Airlines reporting extremely strong numbers, really showing just kind of the resiliency of the US economy. And that's part of what's driving the markets higher to these all-time highs and potentially breaking out higher from here.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of information to digest this week. And even this morning, I was looking back at some general historic interest rates just out of my own curiosity. And it did seem like trends were normalizing, meaning we're moving back to around where the averages have been since the 70s. Do you see this lasting or impacting the markets for the long term?
That's a really good question. If you're looking at, these levels being kind of the long-term average, then you're looking at some pretty long-dated charts here, probably 30 plus years of interest rate data. From my perspective, there's been a lot of regimes and a lot of different market regimes that we've been in over the last 30 years. It's hard to say exactly what the current interest rate environment will provide in the current environment that we're in. But I will say, generally speaking, when we think about interest rates and the impact that it has, there's really two things that we look at. How much debt is there, that was financed potentially at a lower rate, right? And that affects both governments, personal credit, as well as corporate credit. And we have seen a lot of debt issued over the past, call it 10 plus years, issued at much lower rates. And this is going to have a compounding effect for personal spending, companies that have to refinance their debt at a higher rate, and even the US government. Now, the second largest budget in the US budget is actually just servicing our own debt. So that certainly has a long-term effect and provides a bit of a headwind for equities at the moment. But the other thing that you have to look at is really just the expectation of where interest rates will be in the future. At the moment, we don't expect much in terms of rate cuts. Right now, the bond markets are pricing only another 25 basis points of cuts in 2025. So the outlook here for interest rates is not particularly favorable for equities at the moment. But we have seen that shift quite a bit here over the past few months. We could still continue to see, if inflation continues to come in cooler than expected, where that we're going to see perhaps more rate cuts. And that's really what's the primary driver of equities. If we expect more rate cuts, that's going to be a tailwind for equities. If, let's say, we end up not cutting rates at all for this year and rates stay high, that's going to be a headwind for equities. So that's really kind of the two things that I'm primarily looking at.
Thank you for your perspective, Tony. So let's shift gears and get a little more tactical. And I understand that you have two trade ideas for us today. Let's get started. What's that first trade that you're looking to execute to find opportunity in the market this week?
Yeah, the first trade I want to take a look at is NVIDIA, which I consider one of the most undervalued names in the entire S&P 500. And this week we saw a pretty significant announcement from President Trump, which is the Stargate project. Now, there's certainly some back and forth as far as how much money Stargate project actually has versus the headline number. But regardless, what's very clear is that the U.S. is trying to invest strategically in certain industries like they have been in the past to ensure that they are at the forefront of specific industries. And obviously, AI is one of the industries right now that everyone globally is focused on, and the US is trying to invest and make sure that they stay at that forefront. So NVIDIA is by far going to be the primary beneficiary of such a strategic investment from an infrastructure perspective. When we're trying to advance AI for national security, for healthcare, for economic competitiveness, this is really where NVIDIA is the brick and mortar that is required to build all of that on top of. So if you look at a chart here for NVIDIA, we see that the stock actually over the past few months, after having a banner year for the last couple of years, have really gone absolutely nowhere. It's been trading between 130 and 150 for the better part of a year. However, this is generally speaking, this type of consolidation, this trading sideways, is healthy after a stock makes such a big move over such a long period of time. So what you have here is a bit of consolidation, and what I think is that we're primed for a potential breakout here. And the catalyst here is we have earnings in about a month or so for Nvidia, and now if we're really going to see some substantial amount of investment from the U.S. government and into these types of into AI as a venture, that's really what could potentially propel this significantly higher here. And if you look at how far the stock rallied into that 130 to 150 trading range, that would target easily 180 here to the upside. So there's a pretty substantial upside from where we are trading right now. But more importantly, I think that what most investors may not realize is just how cheap of a valuation NVIDIA is actually trading at. It's only trading at 31 times forward earnings, which on paper sounds relatively high compared to the overall market trading at around 21, 22 times forward earnings. But when you actually look look at the growth expectations and profitability of Nvidia, there's nothing that even touches a candle to that in terms of their growth rates. We're talking about EPS growth rates that are in the 65% range. Compare that to something like Apple, which trades at roughly the same valuation. Expectations for EPS growth rates on Apple is around 12, 13%, 65 versus 13. If you look at revenue growth rates, we're talking about 57% revenue growth rate for Nvidia versus 8 or 9% for Apple. And then if you look at net margins, meaning how much money do they make for every $1 in revenue, they're generating 55 cents in profits for every $1 in revenue. Compare that to Apple, which is only earning about a quarter for every $1 in revenue. So when the two companies trading at very similar valuations, one is clearly outperforming the other from a business perspective. That's really where I think Apple is severely overvalued and Nvidia is severely undervalued. And I think it presents an extremely attractive opportunity for traders and for investors, especially now that we have the news that we're going to see some investments from the US government into this particular sector. So the trade structure that I want to use is one that is a little bit more complicated, but I'll walk everyone through here. What I'm going out to is the March expiration. That's a little over 2 months from now. And I'm looking at buying the 145-175 call spread. And what that means is that I'm buying the 145 call option. That's the at-the-money call option. And I'm paying about $12.05 for that at-the-money call. But what I want to do is I want to reduce the overall cost of this trade and reduce the overall risk of this trade by selling that 175 call. My upside target here is around 180. So I'm comfortable selling that 175 call, effectively giving away any further upside above 175 in exchange for about $3.05. And what that means is that instead of laying out about $1,200 just to buy that 145 call, I'm now only laying about $900 per contract to buy the spread. And that's going to reduce my overall risk. It's going to reduce my overall capital outlay. And it's going to also increase my potential returns if I am correct on this directional move. So net net here, I'm paying about $9 for the debit spread, which just means that I'm risking $900 per contract. And because this is a $30 wide debit spread, the difference between those two strike prices, my total potential reward on this is $2,100 per contract. So I get more than a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio on this type of trade if Nvidia is above 175 by that March expiration. And like I said, with the project, with earnings coming up, those are two potential catalysts that can drive the stock significantly higher. And that's what I'm trade that's what I'm trying to set up for with this specific trade. And it gives me a 2-to-1 risk reward ratio if I'm correct. And if it's below 145 at expiration, I'm risking $900 per contract, which is in this particular case about 6% of the stock's value.
Thank you, Tony, for sharing this trade. I do have a couple of questions regarding it. To start, you mentioned this tr the trade is particularly poised to capture any price movement for Nvidia until March expirations. And based on your fundamental research and thesis, it sounds like there might be opportunity beyond March. And so, if that's true, what are some ways investors can capture or structure trades or use tools to extend beyond March potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. So if there's really two scenarios that can play out, right? Either we get to March and we have not reached our 175, 180 price target, or prior to March, we end up reaching that 175, 180 price target if we are correct in our thesis. In both of those scenarios, what you generally want to do is you want to close out the trade structure that I just suggested here. And at that point, basically create a new debit spread. You basically want to recenter the debit spread based on the current price of the stock. So, for example, if let's say by March, the stock is up at 165 and you think that there's still further upside beyond March, then what you want to do is you want to, at that March expiration, look at perhaps buying a 165, maybe 185 call spread at that time. But depending on where the stock is at that time, you want to recenter the debit spread based on what the current prices are and basically buy further upside exposure using a trade structure like this. And using a debit spread, what you're really doing is you're trying to reduce the overall risk as much as possible. As you can see, instead of laying out $1,200 or risking $1,200 by just buying the call option, I'm only risking $900 by buying buying the spread. So there's two things that will happen. Either you're outright reducing less risk, I'm taking on less risk by using a spread versus a call, or what you can do is you can take on more leverage, meaning you can afford more contracts by buying the spread than you would if you were just buying a call option. So those are the two choices that you have as a trader when you reduce your risk, whether you just want to take the risk reduction or you want to take that risk reduction and maybe apply that to more leverage.
Thank you, Tony. So I want to ask the inverse of that. So conversely, your investment thesis could not pan out. And I'm always very interested in the practicality of trade management. So could you share with us some ways you would consider managing the trade if the thesis didn't come to fruition?
Absolutely. And I'm always glad that you asked this question because I always think this is the more important question for investors. There's a lot of things that you can do when things go right, but when things go wrong, there's really one thing that you can do. And it's really important that you do that one thing, which is making sure that you cut your losses if the trade doesn't go in the direction that you expect it to. So whenever you use a structure like this, whether it's a debit spread like the one that I'm showing you here, or if you just bought a long call option, the rules are the same. At least for me, what we find is that if you've lost 50% of the premium that you have paid for either a long call or a debit spread like this, chances are at that point, the thesis that you have is not working out, certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to work out in this particular case, the March time frame. So if I'm paying $9 for this debit spread, and let's say fast forward a month later, the stock hasn't moved much, maybe it's moved a little bit lower, and now this $9 debit spread is now only worth half as much, $4.50. If that were to happen, my rule of thumb here is to simply cut my losses and move on. What that means is that instead of holding on to the trade and hoping that the trade will come back in my favor, what I'm doing is I'm basically closing out the trade, saving the rest of the $4.50 that I have left on that, and applying it to the next trade rather than just holding it and potentially losing the other $4.50 on the trade.
Very helpful. Have an exit strategy is what I'm hearing. So, Tony, let's move on to your second trade of the day. Can you share with us what else you're considering looking at when looking at opportunity in the market this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are certainly in the thick of earnings season, and one of the names that I really like coming up next week is Visa, and it's positioned to capitalize on a bunch of the long-term trends that we have continued to see over the last 10 years, which is, the move away from cash to more digital payments. I don't know about you, but I don't remember the last time that I paid for anything in cash, and just the general growth in terms of e-commerce. We buy fewer and fewer things in brick-and-mortar stores. We buy almost all of our items online, and Visa is the potential beneficiary of all of this, and supported by its industry-leading profitability, which is something that I think a lot of investors may not recognize just how profitable Visa is in this entire venture. If you look at the chart here for Visa, we recently just broke out above a major resistance. I'm sorry, we've been trading in a range between 300 and 320. We just broke out above that trading range here over the last couple of last few days. And what's interesting is that as it broke out above that, it outperformed the S&P 500, which is a really good sign going into an earnings announcement when you see that type of breakout while outperforming the S&P 500. That's a good sign for me going into earnings, which they report on January 30th. And then if you look at the business, this is similar, in my opinion, to kind of looking at it from the Nvidia perspective. This is trading at 29 times forward earnings, which again, on paper sounds expensive compared to, the industry median, which is around 18, and the market, which is around 22. But I think one of the things that most investors don't recognize is how profitable Visa is. Visa, for every $1 in revenue, generates 55 cents in profits. That's on the same par as Nvidia. Growth rates are very similar to what we're seeing in terms of the rest of the market. Like Apple, we were seeing EPS growth around 12%, revenue growth around 10%. That's in line with the rest of the market, but the profitability there far exceeds the rest of the market. The S&P average net net margins on the S&P is around 12%. Visa's at 55%. And that's really what justifies the premium valuation that it trades at. So from my perspective, I think what I want to do is take a bullish view going into earnings next week by using a simple trade structure. I'm going out to the February expiration, which is roughly 1 month from now, and I'm buying the 320 call option for $11.95. And I'm specifically buying a call option that's already $6 in the money. So the Visa is currently trading at 326. I'm buying the 320 call option. And I'm doing so because I want to reduce the overall time decay that I'm paying for this type of for buying a call option going into earnings, because options tend to be very expensive going into earnings, and that all comes down to the extrinsic value of an option. So by buying an in-the-money call option, I'm reducing the extrinsic value part of the equation, meaning that's the part that will decay to zero at expiration if all things else are held constant, and I'm trying to reduce that as much as possible in exchange for unlimited upside going into earnings with limited risk. And this allows me to basically take effectively what is a short-term bullish view going into earnings with limited risk, but getting that leverage here to the upside if I am correct on my thesis for Visa.
Thank you for sharing this trade, Tony. And I'm really curious, as a follow-up question for this trade, you know, as if an investor is looking at this trade, I'd like to talk a little bit about intent. You know, for example, using the strategy could be for the purpose of exercising, meaning ultimately holding the underlying stock, versus trading for the potential increase in value of the contract itself, or potentially something else. Can you talk to us more about intent in long calls?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, the reason I'm using a long call going into an earnings announcement is because I want the downside risk limitation going into a volatile catalyst event like earnings. Because, you know, there's always the chance that Visa, for whatever reason, misses on earnings, and we have seen some misses this quarter move substantially lower. So I want that downside protection, and that's why I'm using a call option going into an earnings announcement rather than outright buying the stock. Now, I do think, you know, I like this stock for the long term, right? So I very well might, after the earnings season, if my thesis is correct, turn the long call into a stock position, right? I can exercise my call option and take the stock, or I can choose to use other types of trade structures. But it really kind of depends on whether you are thinking about this from a short term play going into earnings, or you're thinking about this as a long-term investment. For me, at least for this particular trade, it's more of a short-term trade for earnings. That's why I'm using the call option trade structure. But if, let's say, I was a long-term investor, I might be more inclined to look at buying that stock, because that would avoid kind of paying any type of time premium that I do have to pay for with the call option.
That's helpful context. Thank you, Tony. So we do save time in each of our conversations to look back at past trade ideas and see how they have played out. I find that these moments are really valuable lessons for all traders and investors. So today, I do understand that you're looking back at your December trade with Boeing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's correct. In December, I laid out a bullish thesis for Boeing. Effectively, I feel that Boeing is at the pivotal point of potentially a turnaround, a multi-year turnaround, what has been a bit of a sad story for the company, a sad decline. But I think we're currently turning a corner here with a new CEO moving to Seattle, being a very hands-on CEO, kind of starting to focus on safety, focusing on increasing deliveries. You know, what we did is we sold the January 175 put. At the time, we sold it for about $6.70. Now, at the January 17th expiration, which was last Friday, Boeing was just under 175. And what that means is that this put was assigned to the short seller of this put option. And that means for every contract you sold, you now own 100 shares of Boeing. But because we collected $6.70 on this credit, on the short put, your net cost basis of owning that stock is around $168.30. So you're already profitable on the stock investment here at this point. So I think what the best thing to do here, if you own the stock, meaning if you sold this put option and now you own the stock, what you might want to do is you want to look at start selling cover calls, because we effectively achieved our objective. Selling the put option was to try to acquire the shares at a discount. We were able to do that. Now that we own the shares, The goal here is that, for with any share purchase is you want to you hope that it's going to appreciate in value. However, at the same time, what you can do is earn some income while you wait for that appreciation. And that's exactly what I want to do here with a cover call. And if the combination of these two strategies, selling the put option to acquire the stock at a discount, and then selling cover calls once you do acquire that stock, is what we call the wheel strategy. So what I want to do is I want to go out to the February 28th weekly expiration, not the monthly expiration, the weekly expiration. I'm looking at selling the $200 call option against the 100 shares of stock that I own. And by selling that call option against the 100 shares, I'm basically pledging the 100 shares as collateral for selling that call option. Because if you were to just outright sell a call option, you would have to post margin in order to do so. But because you own the stock, you don't need to post any additional margin. And that basically brings in this particular case, a little over $1. Earlier today, you were bringing in about $1.01 for that $200 call option. And that's going to generate, a little bit north of 6% yield of your of the stock that you own on an annualized basis, waiting for it to appreciate in value. And if Boeing is below $200 at February 28th, you basically keep the $1 in premium, and you can sell a new cover call and keep generating income month after month until the stock reaches your strike price, at which point what you're doing is you're going to sell your stock at that particular strike price, and basically in my case would turn a profit if I were to able to sell it at $200. So the goal here is to basically try to sell your stock at a buy your stock at a discount through a cash secured put, and then as you wait for it to appreciate in value, continuously generate an income stream through that cover call, so that by the time you sell your stock, hopefully you've earned not only the capital appreciation on the stock, but also a significant income stream alongside with that through the short put and the cover call.
Tony, thanks for sharing that. In essence, your look back has created a new trade. And if possible, I think it's helpful for all of our viewers to see these look backs. And if we could keep this one on the table, if we could potentially look back at that in a future date to see what other tactical strategies you might employ with this new trade, or tips for continued portfolio management position.
That sounds great. We would love to do that.
I agree. So before we wrap up our conversation for the day, Tony, can you just give us a quick idea of what's on the agenda for next week on In the Money?
Yeah, we have an action-packed week next week. It's one of the busiest weeks for earnings season, so we'll certainly be covering more earnings plays next week. You have a very packed economic calendar. You have Q4 GDP coming out next week. You have the January FOMC interest rate meeting, which we do expect interest rates to be held constant. But I think what's really important is understanding the language and maybe what changes Chairman Powell will state with regards to expectations for rate cuts for 2025. That's going to have a huge impact on overall investor sentiment. And then we also have the core PCE inflation data coming out. That's the preferred inflation gauge for the Fed. That's going to all drive market sentiment next week. So a lot that we'll be covering during the In the Money session next week.
Excellent. We are definitely looking forward to that. And this does bring us to a close. Again, I want to thank all of our viewers today and thank you for tuning in. Tony, huge thank to you. Thank you to you for bringing us your thoughts, trade ideas, and answering all those great questions.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thank you so much, everyone, for viewing this today.
Absolutely. And if you're interested in further details specific to Tony's trade ideas that were shared today, please join us for our midday market briefing, which will be held tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. And if you're also looking for further insights or you missed the live show, be sure to sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed. You can do that at fidelity.com/active. Investor Weekly. Next week, we'll see you back here for another episode of In the Money. Take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. A cover call writer forgoes participation in any increase in the stock price above the call exercise price, and continues to bear the downside risk of stock ownership if the stock price decreases more than the premium received. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stock to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantees that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of the respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC. Copyright 2025. FMR, LLC. All rights reserved.